What's up, everyone? Welcome back. Hope you had a nice weekend. Today is 7-Eleven, and I want to conduct a little experiment. There is no 7-Eleven gas station nearest to me. Trust me, I went on Google Maps and I looked. There's like a Quick Mart. There's a bunch of Exxon and Shell gas stations, but no 7-Eleven. So if you live close to a 7-Eleven gas station, I would like you to go there. And I would like you to tell me, you have to report back whether 7-Eleven is still giving out free slushies or free ices on this day. I remember a time when I was living in Arizona, the good old college days when I was broke and worked for like $8 an hour, $8.50 after a raise. I worked as a videographer, which is really just a fancy term for somebody who records events, who stands behind a camera and presses play and makes sure that everything is in focus, and then you know the centers are in the subject of the camera. Really basic camera work. That's what I did for my very first job in college on campus. It was my job to record like press conferences and special events and speeches. And every year on 7-Eleven after work, because we were so poor, a girlfriend and I would walk to the closest 7-Eleven and get ourselves a free slushie. So this day holds a lot of sentiment for me. I'm looking at you, Stephanie. Stephanie Dobash, if you are ever listening to this podcast, just know that I think about you a lot. I think about our days. Oh, who is she? She was a fellow videographer. It was her and I. We would take the cameras to like speeches. She would set up on the left side of the room. I would set up on the right side of the room. We would text each other because we were so fucking bored. We would also make funny faces at each other from across the room, hoping that nobody would see us. And we would munch on the free snacks because, of course, whenever there's like a press conference, there's always a table in the back of the room with a black tablecloth, and you would have like free cheeses and crackers and juice boxes and like a Capri Sun. And on 7-Eleven, my freshman year and my sophomore year, I think I only worked this job for 2 years, maybe 2.5, 3. On 7-Eleven, we would go to get free slushies. And we would also go to Starbucks around like late August, early September, when the seasons are changing. We would sit in the coffee shop and drink pumpkin spice lattes. And then we would go for a run along the Tempe River, which is like a river that divided the campus. And there was a lovely bridge that took you to the other side. So that's just a little bit of a 7-Eleven sentiment from me to you. Today's episode is going to be more of like a chit-chatty weekend catch-up. I feel like it's always appropriate to check in with you guys after a weekend. Mine consisted of a lot of movies. But first, before we get into the movies, what's new in the newsletter, Sophie? I'm just like dying for you to tell me. Well, I've actually been recording way more than I've been writing. So in terms of like written blog content, there's only one article that I would like you to know about. And I think it's an entertaining read, okay? It's a little bit funny. And if you are somebody who loves food, like I do, I think you'll enjoy it. So I purchased a box of Flaming Hot mac and cheese, which is exactly what it sounds like. It is mac and cheese, but it's not the Kraft brand, it's not the Deluxe brand, it's not the Annie's brand, it is the Cheetos brand. The same company that makes the chips that we all know and love has come out with a mac and cheese product that tastes exactly like the Flamin' Hot Cheeto chips. Same color too. I have a really disgusting TMI nasty story for you, but we're all friends, we're all like best buds over here, so I'm gonna tell you. And I'm gonna trust that you're not gonna like point and laugh at me, even though you will. In college, I had a phase where the only snack I wanted to eat was Flamin' Hot Cheetos, the chips, not the mac and cheese. And I bought this like Costco size plastic tub of Flamin' Hot chips. And I think I ate half or more of this tub in a single sitting, in a single day. And the poop that I took that night, you guys, my poop was the color of Flamin' Hot Cheetos. I'm talking like fluorescent bright red. It honestly, it really frightened me at first because it looked like blood. And if you are excreting bloody feces, there is something wrong, right? There should not be blood mixed with your number two. And if there is, it's a sign of digestive issues, digestive tract issues. You may have cancer. That's not funny. But as we, like, you know, when you Google symptoms online, the worst idea on the planet, you always have some sort of fucking cancer, okay? You could have, like, a sore throat and you have throat cancer. You could have, you could be sneezing and you have, like, nose cancer. You could have a weird itch on your back that you can never seem to scratch and you have back cancer. Like, everything just fucking leads to cancer. So I Googled my poop and it was like, girl, if you're, like, getting bloody poop, like, go to the doctor. But then I was like, wait, it's not blood. It's just the fact that I've been eating so much Cheeto dust that it has now coated my fecal matter. And that's my story on Flamin' Hot Cheeto chips. The mac and cheese, however, that's a whole other ordeal. And to read it, go to my newsletter, Sophie Radvan on Substack. I review everything. I review the flavor, the taste, the texture, the color, whether I would eat it again, whether I would pay for it again. It's a funny read. Go read it. Now that that's done and dusted, let's jump into the weekend. So like I said, my weekend was full of movies. Two movies in particular. It was really cute. I finally watched Everything, Everywhere, All the Time, which if you haven't heard of that movie by now, girl, I don't know where you've been. This movie is getting so hyped up. And with good reason, it really is a movie that you will remember for years, if not the rest of your life. It is definitely a conversation starter. It's a movie that makes you think, makes you ponder about your health, your mind, the way you're choosing to live your life. And I honestly, it's a really fucking emotional movie. I cannot remember the last time that a movie made me cry. It was many, 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 many years ago. As a child, I often wept to any movie that had to do with like animal abuse or animal cruelty. I'm thinking The Fox and the Hound, that Disney movie, where doesn't the fox die? There's a bear and there's a waterfall and there's a log that stretches across the waterfall. And then there's like this black bear and there's a showdown. I haven't seen this movie since childhood. I can't remember if like the fox falls or no. Does the hound jump to the fox's rescue and like sacrifice himself? And then the fox lives. I don't know, but that movie, fucking traumatizing. I also always cried to Neverending Story. I mean, Atreyu and the horse and the mud and the sinkhole and the horse is just going down, down, down. And is the horse called Atreyu or is the little boy called Atreyu? Because isn't the boy screaming like, Atreyu, no, like, don't leave me. Maybe the horse, that movie always made me cry. Everything, Everywhere, All the Time might be the first movie that made me cry where animals are not involved. It is strictly a person-to-person conflict that really brought me to tears. Not only that, I think it is an incredibly relatable movie considering everything that's going on in the world. I'm sure I'm not alone when I say that a lot of us have struggled with mental health issues since 2020 and the pandemic leading all the way to now. There has been so much more breaking news that has just broken our hearts. Breaking news and breaking hearts is my life motto at the current time. And I'm pretty sure that all of you can relate to that. Everything, Everywhere. I hate saying the full title because it's like, it's such a mouthful. Everything, I'm just going to call it Everything, Everywhere. If you've seen it, then you will know the black, no, well, yeah, it is black. The black everything bagel analogy. If you haven't seen it, the everything bagel, yes, it's a bagel with everything seasoning on it, the kind that you get from a deli. The everything bagel stands for the fact that God, how do I even explain it? God, it's such a fucking trip. The everything bagel just means that like everything in life doesn't matter because you're going to die and everything is going to come to an end. So why bother? Why care? Why fall in love if you or your partner's just going to die in the end? Why work hard at a job when you're just going to get old or get fired possibly? And just why do anything? Like, nothing matters because everything is the same and everything is equal. And if everything's equal, then nothing's important. Nothing matters. Don't put any effort into it. And it's basically an analogy for depression, honestly. And this movie spoke to me because I relate so strongly to both sides of the spectrum. I understand the teenage girl who doesn't want to have a good relationship with her mother because she thinks, what's the point? My mother is never going to accept that I'm gay or that I'm different. Like, I'm not gay. Like, me, I'm talking about the girl in the movie. She's trying to introduce her girlfriend to her very, like, traditional Chinese family for the very first time. And her mother knows that she's gay and in a relationship, but, like, she doesn't want to truly believe it or even say it out loud, let alone introduce this gay girlfriend to the even more traditional uncle or grandfather, I should say. So she's kind of like the black sheep of the family. She's gay. She's like an awkward teenager going through, like, you know, the angsty gothic emo years. And I think we've all been there. And I think we all can feel like that now. Like, I still feel like the black sheep in my family. I said it in my, you know, learning to accept life and stay still episode, that I am the one who lives the furthest away from the family. And there's always this pressure on me to do the traveling for Christmas and holidays. And there's the pressure on me to, like, make the effort to book a plane ticket or get in the car and go on a road trip. Like, I am the black sheep of my family, not just in distance and geological location, but also in the type of job that I have. I am the only one in my family who is technically self-employed and an independent contractor, and I'm the only one who makes money in the online entertainment millennial industry, where I have a podcast and a newsletter and a blog and all these little streams of income, where it's like I don't really have one job. Instead, I have five. Nah, side hustle is not the appropriate term, because I think side hustle is a bit demeaning and takes away credit where credit is due. But I don't have just one job. So if somebody were to ask me, you know, take my grandmother, for example, we're talking about the grandfather in Everything Everywhere, who just, like, doesn't understand the ways of teenagers these days. Same with my grandmother. If I were to tell my grandmother, like, I have a podcast, she'd be like, what the fuck is a podcast? Like, what the fuck does that term literally mean? What is a podcast? Do you interview people? No. Do you, like, investigate crimes? And, like, are you a journalist? No. So you just talk into a microphone and people listen? Yeah, kind of. You know, in the simplest terms, that is what I do. And then, what the fuck is a blog? What the fuck is a newsletter? Like, what do you write about? You write about Flamin' Hot Cheetos mac and cheese? Yeah, I do. And I get paid to do it. You know what I mean? Like, makes perfect sense to us millennials, but to older generations, right? They're totally clueless about it. So going back to the movie, this teenage girl is trying to, like, take the chance and trusting that her mom will take the information that she's gay and in a gay relationship and help translate that to her grandfather. But the mom kind of lets her down in the beginning. She like interjects and says, she's a really, really good friend, right? Like, the difference between girlfriend, romantic girlfriend, and really, really good friend, it's like night and day. And then the teenage daughter, she has this, like, internal crumble. You know, you can see it in her body language. Her shoulders just, like, sink and her back hunches. And she's like, damn, like, my mom really let me down in this instance. She didn't have my back. She doesn't understand how important it is for me to, like, be gay and be open and be honest and just, like, be in this relationship with pride. Like, why do I have to, like, change myself? I felt like that so many times in my life. Like, why can't I just have a normal fucking job where I sit at a desk and I have a boss and I have a paycheck and I have a 401k? Well, the reason I can't is because that fucking sounds miserable to me. The same way it sounds miserable to the girl in the movie to, like, pretend not to be gay or pretend not to be in this relationship, right? We're so used to, like, faking it for our parents and putting ourselves in situations we don't want to be in for our parents and making decisions we don't want to make for our... We're so used to this, you know, mentality while growing up. I'm doing this to make my mom happy. I'm doing this to make my dad proud. I'm doing this to pass on my family's legacy, right? And eventually, you're going to start to kind of hate your life and hate yourself for crumbling to the pressure and making decisions that you didn't want to make. You made them for somebody else. And then begins this like cycle of thinking that all the decisions you make are bullshit and nothing fucking matters. Everything's fucking pointless because you're either going to upset someone, disappoint yourself, or you're just going to fucking die in the end. So why try? And that is depression, and that is symbolized by this everything bagel. And that just really, I have no point, honestly, than to say, like, to have a physical image of what depression can look like, because depression is often coined as an invisible illness, right? You can't see depression. You can't necessarily see when somebody has it or is going through it or is struggling with it. It's not like a bruise. It's not a broken bone. It's not a black eye. It's not physical, visible evidence that you're going through a tough time. It is an invisible cloud hanging above your head, and to be able to put depression on a piece of paper, on a movie screen, and see it as like a black hole or a black bagel, just this giant circle that is sucking you in. It's almost like a black hole in space, and it's just sucking you in, and you need your loved ones to pull you out of it. And that final scene where the girl is like, you know, most of her body has gone through the black hole, through the bagel to the other side of like depression land. She's almost there. But then everyone in her family reaches out and grabs her. Her mom grabs her first, and then the dad grabs the mom, and then the coworker grabs the dad, and then the tax consultant, Jamie Lee Curtis. Amazing. I mean, is Jamie Lee Curtis ever wrong? Is she ever bad? Do you ever watch a movie with JLC, and you think like, wow, that was a shit movie? No, she's phenomenal in everything she does. Something my husband told me about JLC, apparently after that movie came out, people were wondering whether she was wearing prosthetics, because let's face it, like, Jamie Lee Curtis is not like, you know, the young, hot, I mean, she's probably still hot for her age, but like, you know what I'm saying? Like, she's obviously aged the way that we all age, and her body has changed with age. So in the movie, you know, her boobs are just like a little bit lower than they used to be, and her stomach is a little bit softer than it used to be. And people on Twitter were like, oh my God, are you wearing a bodysuit? Are you wearing a fat suit? And Jamie Lee Curtis was like, no, this is just my fucking body as I'm aging the way all of us are going to. Like, we can't all have skin tight cheekbones and perky little boobies and a six pack for the rest of our lives. Like, we're gonna fucking age. This is what a woman's body looks like as she ages, okay? I'm not wearing prosthetics. I'm not wearing a fat suit. This is my body now, and I have no fucking shame about it. And that was, I mean, I love Jamie Lee Curtis any age, any movie, any stage of life, but to see her be like, no, I'm not faking shit anymore, okay? This is my real body, and I'm proud of it, and I don't want no Photoshop, and I don't want no special effects. Like, this is me, and who the fuck cares? This is just like a natural woman's body. So Jamie Lee Curtis, fantastic in that movie. What else? So we have to talk about the husband, okay? I don't know his name. I watched this movie like 3 days ago, and I forget every character's name. But the husband, he, I think, is the most emotional character for me. He is the one, his lines and his special moments made me cry the most. At the very end of the movie, when everything is going down inside the laundromat, and at this point, the teenage daughter has managed to suck the mom into the black hole depression bagel with her, at least temporarily. So now the mom is operating under this dark cloud depression mindset, where now she too thinks nothing matters, who cares, why put in any effort? And because she's thinking this way, she's basically destroying the entire laundromat, and essentially she's destroying her entire health. She signs, not health, life, but health related to that. She signs the divorce papers that her husband, yes, he's the one that technically presented the papers to her, but it becomes very clear that he does not want a divorce. He is just using the papers as almost like a scare tactic or a conversation starter or like a catalyst to open up the conversation of like, what the hell are we doing in our marriage? Like, we're at a fork in the road and we have one or two ways to go. We must decide how to proceed. It's very clear he does not want the actual divorce. All he wants is for to get his wife's attention, to tell her to slow the fuck down because she's so wrapped up in work and stress and taxes and the laundromat. He wants the papers to be like, pause. Here's a fucking red light. Slow down. Look at me. Let's make eye contact and let's fucking talk about the state of our marriage because we can both agree that it is not where we want it to be. And he tells this to the wife. He's like, I don't want to divorce you, but there's no other way to get your attention these days. And even though she knows this, once she's in that like depression dark hole, she signs the papers anyway because she's like, who the fuck cares? I don't want to fucking have a conversation with you. I don't want to look at you. I don't want to be married to you. Nothing matters. Nothing's important. Fuck love. Fuck this marriage. Fuck you. And she signs the papers almost in slow motion. And you can see the husband's face like just crumble because that was not his intention ever, was for, you know, the divorce to actually come to fruition. But he signs the papers and then, or she signs the papers. And then she goes and sits in a corner of the laundromat just by herself, sulking in her depression mindset. And then this like weird action montage happens where the audio fades and the mom is just in her own brain, sinking. And she sees her husband talking to Jamie Lee Curtis, the tax consultant. And in her mind, she's thinking like, wow, my husband's such an idiot. I can't believe I ever married this guy. He's such a failure. What is he doing? Like, why is he trying? Why is he even trying? Right? Because a depressed person looks at others and thinks like, why are you trying? Why are you happy? Like, why isn't everyone depressed and lonely and angry like me? Right? That's depression brain. I know firsthand. So she's thinking all these negative thoughts to herself about her husband, thinking that he's just going to fail her the same way that a lot of people in life tend to fail you. And he comes up to her and he like touches her shoulder and he's like, babe, like she agreed to give us an extension on our tax filing. And the mom just like awakens from this depressive state. And she's like, what do you mean? And he's like, and she's like, how did you get her to do that? How did you get her to agree to an extension? And he said, oh my God, this line gave me shivers down the spine. He says, I just talked to her. And that line, I think, encapsulates everything that I want myself to do and everything I want you to do and everything I want strangers to do moving forward. If we were just able to talk to each other and explain, not that we owe anyone an explanation, but if we were just able to explain our situations and how these situations are affecting our emotions and our behaviors and our way of thinking, we would have so many more people on our side and we would have so many more sympathetic people and understanding people. The husband just says, like, I told her, I talked to her about our situation, about the fact that our marriage is crumbling and about the fact that you're stressed and I'm stressed and our business isn't doing as well as we thought it was and we're confused and we're lost and we're like spiraling in this world of never-ending chaos. And I just talked to her and told her that we were in distress and we needed help and we needed someone to just give us a fucking break. And she agrees. Jamie Lee Curtis's character is like, I get it. She sits down with the wife and says, hey, my husband handed me divorce papers once upon a time, and I didn't handle it nearly as well as you're handling the situation now. Like, I was furious. I drove his car into a telephone pole, and I acted out aggressively. Meanwhile, you are just kind of sitting here feeling depressed. And the two women have this like heart-to-heart over their husbands and like marital issues. And then the issue resolves itself because they just talked. Instead of arguing or bickering or trying to change the other one's mind, just talk, just have a conversation and see how quickly you can get people to understand your situation and, you know, get on your side. Also, There's a lot of universes in this movie, a lot of multiverses. It's very Marvel inspired, I would say. And in one of the universes, the wife and the husband are not together. I guess she chose to stay with her family and get into the family business instead of running away for love and marrying someone they didn't approve of. So in this alternate reality, they're not together, but they end up meeting on the street. And of course, the husband says, like, I've always been in love with you, even though you didn't choose me. I will take you back anytime you want. Like, I am always here for you. And he says something like, you know, in an alternate universe, I would love to just do taxes and laundry with you, referring to the universe that we spend most of the time in, where it's about a laundromat and it's about taxes and it's about these really mundane, simplistic, everyday tasks that we do with friends and loved ones and our parents and our husbands that we don't really appreciate. Because in our minds, we're thinking like, oh, we're just doing laundry. We're just sitting here folding socks and folding t-shirts and putting them in drawers. And this is boring. And I would rather be on a tropical vacation with you. And life is boring. You know what? Life is fucking boring sometimes. But in an alternate universe where things are not boring, where things are maybe sad or things are maybe lonely or things are maybe heartbreaking or things are maybe 10 times worse, in that alternate universe, you're gonna wish for boring. You're gonna wish for simple. And you're gonna wish for mundane. And you're gonna wish that you could just sit on the couch next to somebody you love and fold socks. And that sentence, that line, like, all I wanna do is taxes with you. All I wanna do is go to the laundromat with you. All I wanna do is go to the grocery store. Because life is made up of these tiny moments that may feel like nothing in the moment, but years past or in a different time or in a different universe, that one little thing is going to be that anchor. It's going to be that anchor to goodness and happiness and joy. It's going to be your googly eyes, okay? By the end of the movie, we realize that googly eyes, so the everything bagel is a symbol for depression. And the googly eyes are a symbol for like joy and happiness and living in the moment and embracing these small moments. Laundry in an alternate universe is going to be the googly eye because it's all about perspective, right? When things are stressful and it feels like the world is crumbling, like it felt for me when Roe versus Wade was overturned, I want googly eyes. And googly eyes are going to be those simple joys. Okay, I realize that if you've never heard of this movie or never seen this movie, what I've just said for the past fucking 25 minutes is going to be like, it's going to be like an acid trip. Like, what the hell are you talking about? So let's move on to a different movie. Maybe you've seen this. Maybe not, but there are going to be spoilers ahead, which is why I saved it for the last, you know, 5-10 minutes of the episode. We're going to talk about Thor. It's Thor 4, although technically it's called Thor, Love and Thunder. If you are someone who lives for the post-credit scenes of a Marvel movie, because the post-credit scenes tend to reveal what the next, you know, sequel is going to be about, and it introduces new characters, new actors, new conflicts, new dilemmas. If you live for the post-credit scenes, you can turn off the episode right now. No hurt feelings, because I'm going to reveal some shit. So over the weekend, my husband and I went on a proper movie date. We watched Everything Everywhere at home in our movie room, and it was cute, but we went on an actual movie date like 2 days after. And I have to admit, I felt really stupid and clueless walking around this IMAX theater. I used to be such a fucking pro when it came to the movie dance. You get your tickets, you get your popcorn over here, you butter your popcorn over there, there's the straw station, there's the ketchup and mustard station for your hot dog. And this was the first, okay, technically second, I think we watched the latest Fast and Furious at a proper movie. So this is probably the second movie we've seen post-COVID, which just means that I am totally out of practice. We were walking around this IMAX theater like the three blind mice. We were like, where's the bathroom? Where's the popcorn station? How do we order? Like, do we butter the popcorn ourselves? Does it come pre-buttered? I forgot the name of like that, the frozen ice cream. It's called Dibs. But I'm standing there at the register like, do you have like the mini ice cream bites where it's like, it comes in a little container and he's like, you mean Dibs? I'm like, oh yeah, Dibs. So we went to see Thor, Love and Thunder. And I won't reveal the actual movie itself. I just want to talk about that one post-credit scene that got me really excited. The movie technically has two post-credit scenes, one with Natalie Portman and one with Zeus. So sometime during the movie, Zeus, played by Russell Crowe, and Thor get into a fight, and we think that Thor kills Zeus. In the post-credits scene, we realize that Zeus is alive, he's injured, but he's recovering, and he's fucking pissed, right? He's fucking pissed at Thor for using his own weapon against him. Thor throws Zeus's lightning bolt through Zeus's chest. Okay, there's a mouthful right there. So the scene is like Zeus, and you think that Zeus is just talking to himself, right? His maidens are aiding him and like healing his wounds and cleaning up his armor. And he's like, nobody respects gods anymore. You know, we're a laughing stock. Everybody just wants superheroes. Everyone wants Superman and, well, not Superman because Superman's DC, but everyone wants like Captain America and everyone wants Iron Man and everyone wants fucking Spider-Man, but nobody wants gods. Gods are so, you know, we're a laughing stock. Nobody cares about gods. Everyone wants like the coolest, newest superhero. And then it becomes clear that Zeus is actually talking to someone else in the room, somebody who's off camera. And it's his son. So Zeus's son is Hercules. And Zeus says, you know, I'm too old to take on this battle, but son, I want you to basically like fuck up Thor and come go after Thor and prove that gods are better than superheroes. Technically, Thor is a god, right? He's the god of thunder, but he's playing the role of a superhero. He's saving universes and saving planet Earth, and he's wearing the cape and he's wearing the uniform. Thor, you would consider maybe more of a superhero than a god, but Zeus is just purely a god. He doesn't really like defend Earth. So he sends his son, who is Hercules, to go after Thor. And that is going to be Thor 5, right? The main premise or main dilemma of Thor 5. Who is playing Hercules? This got me so excited. I jumped out of my goddamn seat. The actor playing Hercules is Roy Kent from Ted Lasso. The actor's name is, I had to Google this, Brett Goldstein. He plays Roy Kent in Ted Lasso, which is the most heartwarming, feel-good, wholesome show I have seen in recent history. Jason Sudeikis is phenomenal, but also just so delicious. What the fuck was Olivia, not Olivia Munn, what's her name? Whatever. What the fuck was his wife thinking for choosing Harry Styles over Jason? Is it Jason Sudeikis? Yeah. I'm like, dude, I'm so bad with actor names. It's ridiculous. Why did I choose to have a movie-based episode when I can't even get the character name right? Anyway, Jason Sudeikis, delicious. Brett Goldstein, delicious. And his role as Roy Kent is like Oscar worthy, okay? That's my favorite character on Ted Lasso. And it's so cool to see an actor, like the rise of an actor and the birth of the next superstar. Ted Lasso is a very successful show, but it's a very niche show where Brett Goldstein was kind of like a nobody, right? Ted Lasso just consists, besides Jason Sudeikis, obviously, and Juno Temple. Otherwise, every character on that show is kind of a nobody, right? You're not really supposed to have star power. It's just a bunch of dudes playing soccer on a soccer team. And now we have Brett Goldstein, who is a fucking superstar. He rose to stardom as Roy Kent, and now he's a goddamn Marvel superhero god. And I am so excited to see Roy Kent, even though it's not going to be Roy Kent anymore, playing the role of Hercules. And I have so many questions. Well, actually, I have one question and one question only. What accent is he going to have? Because Russell Crowe playing Zeus was putting on, like, you know, a cliche, stereotypical Grecian accent. Roy Kent, or fucking Brett Goldstein, I should say, is an English actor. So my question is he going to keep his original voice from Ted Lasso, his original British accent, or is he going to do an American accent? Or is he going to follow in Russell Crowe's footsteps and do a fake Grecian accent? I want to know. I want to know. And I want to see Brett Goldstein shirtless. I would like to see a naked battle between Chris Hemsworth and Brett Goldstein. That would be nice. But we'll have to wait who knows how many goddamn years before Thor 5 comes out. That's it from me, everybody. Have a great Monday. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.